You. What do you think you're doing?
Giving you a hand, Card said. Ahead, the Lancer's 20 quad laser batteries opened up, raining green flashes down on the wild card. The turbo lasers fired back, their three groups of fire looking rather pathetic in comparison. All right, we've got this one tied down. Better get out before that other one finds their range.
You've got him tied down? Look, Card.
I said get out. Card cut him off sharply. We can't hold him forever. Don't worry about me. I'm not exactly alone out here.
Here they come,
Abe said, and Card took a moment to glance into the rear display. They were coming, all right. 15 freighters strong, all zeroing in on the suddenly outgunned Lancer. From the comm came an amazed whistle.
You weren't kidding, were you?
No, I wasn't, Card said. Now get going, will you? Gillespie laughed out loud.
I'll let you in on a little secret, Card. I'm not alone either.
And suddenly, barely visible through the haze of laser fire hammering at the wild card's viewports, the exhaust glows of nearly 20 ships suddenly veered off their individual courses. Sweeping in like hungry Barabel, they converged on the second Lancer.
So, Card, at a guess, I'd say neither of us is going to get much business done at Chazwa this time around. What say we continue this conversation somewhere else? Say in 8 days?
Card smiled. I look forward to it. He looked back at the Lancer, and his smile faded. Standard Lancer crew was 850, and from the capable way that one was holding off the rest of the ships, he would guess they were running with full complement. How many of them, he wondered, had been freshly created at Grand Admiral Thrawn's clone factory? By the way, Gillespie, he added, if you happen to run into any of our colleagues on the way, you might want to invite them along. I think they'd be interested in what I have to say.
You got it, Card. See you in 8.
Card switched off the comm. So that was it. Gillespie would broadcast the word to the other major smuggling groups, and knowing Gillespie, the open invitation would quickly transmute into something just short of a command appearance. They'd be at Trogon, all of them, or near enough. Now all he had to figure out was what exactly he was going to say to them. Grand Admiral Thrawn leaned back in his command chair. All right, gentlemen, he said, his gaze flicking in turn to each of the 14 men standing in a loose semicircle around his council. Are there any questions? The slightly rumpled-looking man at one end of the semicircle glared at the others.
No questions, Admiral, he said, his precise military voice in sharp contrast to his civilian sloppy appearance. What's our timetable?
Your freighter is being prepped now, Thrawn told him. You'll leave as soon as it's ready. How soon do you expect to penetrate the Imperial Palace?
No sooner than 6 days from now, sir, the rumpled man said. I'd like to hit one or two other ports before taking the ship into Coruscant. Their security will be easier to breach if we have a legitimate data trail they can backtrack. Unless you want it done sooner, of course.
Thrawn's glowing eyes narrowed slightly, and Pelion could tell what he was thinking. Mara Jade, sitting there in the middle of Rebel headquarters, perhaps at this very moment giving them the location of the Emperor's storehouse on Wayland.
Timing is critical in this operation, Thrawn told the commando leader. But speed alone is useless if you're compromised before even entering the palace. You will be the man on the scene, Major Himron. I leave it to your judgment.
The commando leader nodded.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Admiral. We won't fail you.
Thrawn smiled fractionally.
I know you won't, Major. Dismissed.
Silently, the 14 men turned and filed out of the command room.
You seem surprised, Captain, at some of my instructions, Thrawn commented as the door slid shut behind them. Yes, sir, I was,
Pelion admitted.
It all made sense, of course,
he added hastily.
I simply hadn't thought the operation out to that endpoint. All endpoints must be prepared for, Thrawn said, keying his board.
The lights muted, and on the walls of the command room, a sampling of holographic paintings and planics appeared.
Umriss artwork,
he identified it for Pelion's benefit.
One of the most curious examples of omission to be found anywhere in the civilized galaxy. Until they were contacted by the 10th Alderaanian expedition, not a single one of the dozens of Imrys cultures had ever developed any form of three-dimensional artwork.
Interesting,
Pelion said dutifully.
Some flaw in their perceptual makeup?
Many of the experts still think so, Thrawn said. It seems clear to me, though, that the oversight was actually a case of cultural blind spots combined with a very subtle but equally strong social harmonization. A combination of traits we'll be able to exploit. Pelion looked at the artwork, his stomach tightening.
We're attacking Imrist.
It's certainly ripe for the taking, Thrawn pointed out. And a base there would give us the capability to launch attacks into the very heart of the Rebellion.
Except that the Rebellion must know that,
Pelion said carefully. If Sabaoth's ongoing demands for an attack on Coruscant had finally gotten to the Grand Admiral...
They'd launch a massive counterattack, sir, if we so much as made a move toward Imrist.
Exactly, Thrawn said, smiling with grim satisfaction. Which means that when we're finally ready to draw the Coruscant Sector fleet into ambush, Imrist will be the perfect lure to use. If they come out to meet us, we'll defeat them then and there. And if they somehow sense the trap and refuse to engage, we'll have our forward base. Either way, the Empire will triumph. He reached to his board again, and the holographic artwork faded into a tactical star map. But that battle is still in the future, he said. For now, our prime goal is to build a force strong enough to ensure that ultimate victory, and to keep the Rebellion off balance while we do so. Pelion nodded.
The assault on Horde Mantell should go a long way toward accomplishing that.
It will certainly create a degree of fear in the surrounding systems, Thrawn agreed. As well as drawing away some of the rebel pressure on our shipyard supply lines.
That would be helpful,
Pelion said with a scowl.
The last report from Bill Bringy said the shipyards there were running critically low on Tabana gas, as well as Ephredium and Camrys.
I've already ordered the Bespin garrison to step up their Tabana gas production, Thrawn said, tapping his control board. As for the metals, intelligence recently reported locating a convenient stockpile. The report came up, and Pelion leaned forward to read it. He got as far as the location listing.
This is intelligence's idea of a convenient stockpile?
I take it you disagree? Thrawn asked mildly. Pelion looked at the report again, feeling a grimace settling in on his face. The Empire had hit Lando Calrissian's walking mining complex on the super-hot planet Niklon once before, back when they needed mole miners for Thrawn's assault on the Sluis Van shipyards. That other raid had cost the Empire over 1 million man-hours, first in preparing the Star Destroyer Judicator for the intense heat at Niklon's close orbit distance from its sun, and then for repairing the damage afterward.
I suppose that depends, sir,
he said,
on how long we'll be losing the use of whichever Star Destroyer is detailed for the raid.
A valid question, Thrawn agreed. Fortunately, there will be no need this time to tie up any Star Destroyers. Three of our new dreadnoughts should be more than adequate to neutralize Niklon's security.
But a dreadnought won't be able to...
Pelion interrupted himself as he suddenly understood.
It won't have to be big enough to survive in open sunlight. If they can take over one of the shield ships that fly freighters in and out of the inner system, a dreadnought would be small enough to stay behind its umbrella.
Exactly, Thrawn nodded. And capturing one should pose no problem. For all their impressive size, shield ships are little more than shielding, coolant systems, and a small container ship's worth of power and crew. Six fully loaded assault shuttles would make quick work of it. Pelion nodded, still skimming the report.
What happens if Calrissian sells his stockpiles before the assault force gets there?
He won't, Thrawn assured him. The market price for metals has just begun to rise again, and men like Calrissian always wait for it to go just a little higher. Unless Calrissian was suddenly overcome with a swell of patriotic fervor toward his friends back in the New Republic hierarchy,
and decided to sell his metals at a reduced price.
I'd still recommend, sir, that the attack be carried out as soon as possible.
Recommendation noted, Captain, Thrawn said, smiling slightly. And as it happens, already acted upon. The raid was launched 10 minutes ago.
Pelion smiled tightly. Someday, he decided, he'd learn not to try to second-guess the Grand Admiral.
Yes, sir.
Thrawn leaned back in his chair.
Return to the bridge, Captain, and prepare to make the jump to light speed. Ord Mantell is waiting.
Chapter 7.
The beeping from his board prodded Luke out of his light doze. Blinking away the sleep, he gave the displays a quick scan. R2, he called, stretching as best he could in the tight confines of the cockpit. We're just about there. Get ready. A nervous-sounding warble came in acknowledgement. Come on, R2, relax, Luke urged the droid, settling his fingertips around the X-Wing's hyperspace lever and letting the force flow through him. Almost time. Now. He pulled the lever back, and the star lines appeared and collapsed back into stars. And there, directly ahead, was the Nogri homeworld of Honegger. R2 gave a soft whistle. I know, Luke agreed, feeling a little sick himself. Leia had told him what to expect, but even with that warning, the sight of the world lying in the X-Wing's path was a shock. Beneath the sparse white clouds floating over the surface, the entire planetary landmass was a flat, uniform brown. Colm grass, Leia had called it. The local Honegrin plants the Empire had genetically modified to perpetuate their systematic destruction of the planet's ecology. That deceit, combined with first Vader's and later Thrawn's carefully limited aid, had bought the Empire 4 decades of Nogri service. Even now, squads of Nogri death commandos were scattered around the galaxy, fighting and dying for those whose cold-blooded treachery and counterfeit compassion had turned them into slaves. R2 warbled something, and Luke broke his gaze away from the silent monument to Imperial ruthlessness. I don't know, he admitted, as the droid's question scrolled across his computer display. We'd have to get a team of environment and ecology specialists out here before we could tell. Doesn't look very hopeful, though, does it? The droid chirped, an electronic shrug that turned suddenly into a startled shrill. Luke's head jerked up, just as a small, fast-attack patrol ship shot past overhead. I think they've spotted us, he commented as casually as possible. Let's hope it's the Nogri, and not an impi-
Starfighter, identify yourself.
A deep, cat-like voice mewed from the comm. Luke keyed for transmission, reaching out with the force toward the patrol ship that was now curving back into attack position. Even at this range, he should have been able to sense a human pilot, which meant that it was indeed a Nogri out there. At least he hoped so. This is Luke Skywalker, he said. Son of the Lord Darth Vader, brother of Leia Organa Solo. For a long moment, the calm was silent.
Why have you come?
Normal prudence, Luke knew, would have suggested that he not bring up the matter of his power cells until he had a better idea of how matters stood politically with the Nogri leaders. But Leia had mentioned several times how impressed she'd been by the Nogri sense of honor and straightforward honesty. My ship's primary power cells have been damaged, he told the other. I thought you might be able to help me. There was a soft hiss from the comm.
You place us in great danger, son of Vader. Imperial ships come to Honegger at random times. If you are sighted, all will suffer.
I understand, Luke said, a small weight lifting from him. If the Nogri were worried about him being spotted by Imperials, at least they hadn't completely rejected Leia's invitation to rebel against the Empire. If you'd prefer, I'll leave. He held his breath as, behind him, R2 moaned softly. If the Nogri took him up on his offer, it was questionable as to whether they'd be able to get anywhere else on the power they had left. Apparently, the Nogri pilot was thinking along the same lines.
The Lady Vega has already risked much on behalf of the Nogri. We cannot permit you to endanger your life. Follow me, son of Vega. I will bring you to what safety the Nogri can offer.
According to Leia, there was only a single small area on Honaker that had been made capable of supporting any plant life other than the Empire's bio-engineered colm grass. Kabarak and the matriarch of the clan Kimbar had kept her, Chewbacca, and 3PO in one of the villages there, managing with skill and more than a little luck to hide her from prying Imperial eyes. Leia had included the location of the clean land along with the coordinates of the system itself, and as Luke followed the patrol ship down toward the surface of the planet, it quickly became apparent that they weren't going there. "Where are we headed?" he asked the Nogri pilot as they dipped beneath a layer of clouds.
"To the future of our world."
"Ah," Luke murmured under his breath. A double line of jagged cliffs could be seen ahead, looking a little like stylized dorsal ridges from a pair of Tatooine crate dragons. "Is your future in those mountains?" There was another soft hiss from the comm.
"As the Lady Vega and the Lord Vega before her, you also read the souls of the Nogri."
Luke shrugged. It hadn't been much more than a lucky guess, actually.
"Where do we go?"
"Others will show you. For here, I must leave you. Farewell, son of Vega. My family will long cherish the honor of this day."
The patrol ship cut sharply upward, heading back toward space. And in perfect synchronization, two combat-equipped cloud cars rose from seemingly nowhere to settle into flanking positions.
"We greet you, son of Vega,"
a new voice said from the comm.
"We are honored to guide you. Follow."
One of the cloud cars moved ahead to take the point, the other dropping back to rearguard position. Luke stayed with the formation, trying to see just where they might be headed. As far as he could tell, the cliffs were as barren as the rest of the planet. R2 chirped, and a message scrolled across Luke's display.
"A river?"
Luke asked, peering out his canopy.
"Where? Oh, there it is. Emptying out from between the two cliff lines, right?"
The droid beeped an affirmative. It looked to be a pretty fast-moving river, too, Luke decided, as they flew closer, and he could see the numerous lines of white water indicating submerged rocks. Probably explained why the gorge between the two cliff lines was so sharp and deep. They reached the end of the cliff lines a few minutes later. The lead cloud car turned to port side, lifting smoothly over a set of foothills and disappearing around the side of one of the higher crags. Luke followed, smiling tightly as an old memory came to mind.
"You're required to maneuver straight down this trench."
Guiding the X-Wing around the foothills, he flew into the shadow of the cliffs themselves, and into an entirely different world. Along the narrow banks of the river, the ground was a solid mass of brilliant green. R2 whistled in startled amazement.
"They're plants," Luke said,
realizing only after the words were out of his mouth how ridiculous they sounded. Of course they were plants. But to find plants on Honaker...
"It is the future of our world,"
one of his escorts said, and there was no mistaking the grim pride in his voice.
"The future which the Lady Vega gave us. Continue to follow, son of Vega. The landing area is still ahead."
The landing area turned out to be a large, flat-topped boulder jutting partway into the swift-moving river about 2 kilometers along the gorge. With a cautious eye on the racing water beneath him, Luke eased the X-Wing down. Fortunately, it was larger than it had looked from 50 meters up. The cloud cars waited until he had touched down, then swung around and headed back down the gorge. Shutting the X-Wing systems back to standby, Luke looked around. The greenery he saw now was not as monochromatic as he'd first thought. there were at least four slightly different shades represented, intermingled in a pattern that was too consistent to be accidental. A pipe could be seen angling down into the river at one point, its other end disappearing up into the plant growth. Utilizing the pressure of the current, he decided, to bring water up over the bank for irrigation. A few meters downstream from the boulder, hidden from view by a rock overhang, he could see a small hut-like building. Two Nogri stood just outside its door, one with steely gray skin, the other a much darker gray. Even as he watched, they started toward him.
"Looks like the reception committee," Luke commented to R2,
hitting the switch to pop his canopy.
"You stay put here. And I mean stay put. You fall in the water like you did that first trip to Dagobah, and you'll be lucky if we can even find all the pieces."
There was no need to give the order twice. R2 warbled a nervous acknowledgement, then an equally nervous question.
"Yes, I'm sure they're friendly," Luke assured him,
pulling off his flight helmet and getting to his feet.
"Don't worry. I won't be going far."
Vaulting over the X-Wing's side, he headed toward his hosts. The two Nogri were already at the edge of the landing boulder, standing silently watching him. Luke grimaced to himself as he walked toward them, stretching out with the Force and wishing he were skilled enough to get some reading, any reading on this species.
"In the name of the New Republic, I bring you greetings,"
he said when he was close enough to be heard over the roar of the river.
"I'm Luke Skywalker, son of the Lord Darth Vader, brother of Leia Organa Solo."
He held out his left hand, palm upward, as Leia had instructed him to do. The older Nogri stepped forward and touched his snout to Luke's palm. The nostrils flattened themselves against his skin, and Luke had to fight to keep from twitching away from the tickling sensation.
"I greet you, son of Vader,"
the alien said, releasing Luke's hand. In unison, both Nogri dropped to their knees, hands splaying out to the sides in the deference gesture Leia had described.
"I am Okivam, Clan Bakhtor. I serve the Nogri people here at the future of our world. You honor us with your presence."
"I am honored by your hospitality,"
Luke said as both aliens rose again to their feet.
"And your companion is?"
"I am Kavarak, Clan Kimbar,"
the younger Nogri said.
"The Clan of Vader has now doubly honored me."
"Kavarak, Clan Kimbar," Luke repeated, eyeing the young alien with new appreciation.
So this was the young Nogri commando who had risked everything, first in bringing Leia to his people, then in protecting her from Grand Admiral Thrawn.
"For your service to my sister Leia, I thank you. My family and I are in your debt."
"The debt is not yours, son of Vader,"
Okivam said.
"The debt rather belongs to the Nogri people. The actions of Kavarak, Clan Kimbar, were only the first line of repayment."
Luke nodded, not really sure of what to say to that.
"You called this place the future of your world?"
he asked, hoping to change the subject.
"It is the future given to the Nogri people by the Lady Vader,"
Okivam said, waving his hands in a circular gesture that took in the entire valley.
"Here, with her gift, we cleanse the land of the Empire's poisoned plants. Here will someday be enough food to provide for all."
"It's impressive,"
Luke said, and meant it. Out in the open, all that greenery would have stood out against the background culm grass like a bantha at a Jawa family gathering. But here, with the twin cliff lines blocking the view from everywhere except more or less straight up, there was a good chance incoming Imperial ships would never even suspect its existence. The river supplied ample water. The lower latitude implied a slightly longer growing season than that at the Cleanland itself, and if worse came to worst, a number of properly placed explosives could dam the river or bring down part of the cliffs themselves, burying the evidence of their quiet rebellion against the Empire. And the Nogri had had barely a month to plan, design, and build it all. No wonder Thrawn and Vader before him had found the Nogri to be such useful servants.
It was the Lady Vader who made it possible,
O'Keevum said.
We have little to offer in the way of hospitality, son of Vader. But what we have is yours.
Thank you,
Luke nodded. But as your patrol ship pilot pointed out, my presence on Honiger is a danger to you. If you can provide my ship with replacement power cells, I'll be on my way as quickly as I can. I would pay, of course.
We could accept no payment from the son of Vader,
O'Keevum said, looking shocked at the very idea.
It would be merely a single line of the debt owed by the Nogri people.
I understand, Luke said, stifling a sigh. They meant well, certainly, but all this guilt about their service to the Empire was going to have to stop. Races and beings far more sophisticated than they were had been equally taken in by the Emperor's deceits. I suppose the first step is to find out whether you have spares that'll fit my ship. How do we go about doing that?
It is already done,
Kaparak said.
The cloud cars will carry word of your need to the spaceport at Nisteo. The power cells and technicians to install them will be here by nightfall. Meanwhile, we offer you our hospitality,
O'Keevum added, throwing a sideways look at Kaparak, perhaps feeling the younger Nogri should let his elder do the talking.
I'd be honored, Luke said. Lead the way.
The hut under the cliff overhang was as small as it had looked from the landing boulder. Most of the available space was taken up by two narrow cots, a low table, and what appeared to be the food storage slash preparation module from a small spaceship. But at least it was quieter than outside.
This will be your home while you are on Honiger,
O'Keevum told him.
Kaparak and I will stand guard outside to protect you with our lives.
That won't be necessary,
Luke assured them. Looking around the room, clearly it had been set up for long-term occupancy.
What do you two do here, if I may ask?
I am caretaker to this place,
O'Keevum said.
I walk the land to see that the plants are growing properly. Kaparak, Clan Kimbar.
He looked at the younger alien, and Luke got the distinct impression of a grim humor in the glance.
Kaparak Clan Kimbar is a fugitive from the Nogri people. Even now, we have many ships searching for him.
Of course, Luke said dryly. With Grand Admiral Thrawn threatening to subject Kaparak to a complete Imperial interrogation, it had been vital that the young commando escape from custody and drop out of sight. It was equally vital that knowledge of the Empire's betrayal be passed on to the Nogri commando teams scattered around the galaxy. The two objectives dovetailed rather nicely.
Do you require food?
O'Keevum asked.
Or a rest?
I'm fine, thank you, Luke said. I think the best thing would probably be for me to go back to my ship and start pulling those power cells out.
May I assist?
Kaparak asked.
I'd appreciate that, yes,
Luke said. He didn't need any help, but the sooner the Nogri worked out this supposed debt of theirs, the better.
Come on, toolkit's in the ship.
There is further word from Nisteo,
Kaparak said, moving invisibly through the darkness to where Luke sat with his back against the X-Wing's landing skid.
The captain of the Imperial ship has decided to complete minor repairs here. He expects the work to take 2 days.
He hesitated.
To you, son of Vader, the Dynasts express their apologies.
No apology necessary,
Luke assured him, looking up past the shadow of the starfighter's wing at the thin band of stars shining down amid the otherwise total blackness. So that was that. He was stuck here for 2 more days.
I knew when I came here that this might happen. I'm just sorry I have to impose further on you.
Your presence is not an imposition.
I appreciate the hospitality.
Luke nodded toward the stars overhead.
I take it there's still no indication they might have spotted my ship?
Would the son of Vader not know if that happened?
Kabarak countered.
Luke smiled in the darkness. Even Jedi have limitations, Kabarak. Distant danger is very hard to detect.
And yet, he reminded himself silently, the Force was obviously still with him. That strike cruiser up there could easily have turned up at a far more awkward time. Say, while the Nogri tech team had been in transit to or from the valley. Or even while Luke himself was heading out to space. An alert captain could have picked up on either and brought the whole thing crashing down right there. There was a whisper of movement, felt rather than heard over the sound of the river, as Kabarak sat down beside him.
It is not enough, is it?
The Nogri asked quietly.
This place, the Dynasts call it our future, but it is not.
Luke shook his head. No, he had to admit. You've done a tremendous job with this place, and it'll certainly help feed your people. But the future of Honegger itself... I'm not an expert, Kabarak, but from what I've seen here, I don't think Honegger can be saved.
The Nogri hissed between his needle teeth, the sound barely audible over the racing water below.
You speak the thought of many of the Nogri people,
he said.
Perhaps none really believe otherwise.
We can help you find a new home, Luke promised. There are many worlds in the galaxy. We'll find you a place where you can begin again.
Kabarak hissed again.
But it will not be Honegger.
Luke swallowed hard.
No.
For a minute, neither spoke. Luke listened to the sounds of the river, his heart aching with sympathy for the Nogri. But what had been done to Honegger was far beyond his power to change. The Jedi, indeed, had their limitations. There was another ripple of air as Kabarak climbed back to his feet.
Are you hungry?
He asked Luke.
If so, I can bring food.
Yes, thank you, Luke said.
The Nogri left. Stifling a sigh, Luke shifted position against the landing skid. It was bad enough knowing there was a problem he was helpless to solve. To have to sit here for 2 days, with the whole thing staring him accusingly in the face, only made it worse. He looked up at the thin trail of stars, wondering what Leia had thought of the whole situation. Had she, too, realized that Honegger was too far gone to save? Or could she have had some idea of how to bring it back? Or had she been too busy with the immediate concerns of survival to even think that far ahead? He grimaced as another small pang of guilt tugged at him. Somewhere out there, on Coruscant, his sister was about to give birth to her twins. Might have already done so, for all he knew. Han was with her, of course, but he'd wanted to be there, too. But if he couldn't be there in person... Taking a deep breath, he allowed his body to relax. Once before, on Dagobah, he'd been able to reach out to the future, to see his friends and the path they were on. Then he'd had Yoda to guide him. But if he could find the proper pattern on his own, he might be able to catch a glimpse of his niece and nephew. Carefully, keeping his thoughts and will focused, he stretched out through the Force. Leia was crouching in the darkness, her blaster and lightsaber in her hands, her heart racing with fear and determination. Behind her was Winter, holding tightly to 2 small lives, helpless and fragile. A voice... Hans, filled with anger and the same determination. Chewbacca was somewhere nearby, somewhere overhead, he thought, and Lando was with him. Before them were shadowy figures, their minds filled with menace and a cold and deadly purpose. A blaster fired, and another. A door burst open. Leia! Luke blurted, his body jerking violently as the trance broke like a bubble. One final image flickering and vanishing into the Honegger night. A faceless person, moving toward his sister and her children from behind the shadowy evil. A person person edge with the power of the Force.
What is it?
An ogre voice snapped beside him. Luke opened his eyes to find Kabarak and O'Keevum crouching in front of him, a small glow rod bathing their nightmare faces in dim light. I saw Leia, he told them, hearing the trembling of reaction in his voice. She and her children were in danger. He took a shuddering breath, purging the adrenaline from his body. I have to get back to Coruscant. O'Keevum and Kabarak exchanged glances.
But if the danger is now,
O'Keevum said.
It wasn't now, Luke shook his head. It was the future. I don't know how far ahead.
Kabarak touched O'Keevum's shoulder, and for a minute, the Nogri conversed quietly in their own language.
All right,
Luke told himself, running through the Jedi calming techniques.
All right. Lando had been in the vision. He distinctly remembered seeing Lando there.
But Lando, as far as he knew, was still out at his Nomad City mining operation on Niklon, which meant Luke still had time to get back to Coruscant before the attack on Leia could happen.
Or did it? Was the vision a true image of the future? Or could a change in events alter what he'd seen?
Difficult to see,
Master Yoda had said of Luke's vision on Dagobah.
Always in motion is the future.
And if someone of Yoda's depth of knowledge in the Force had been unable to sift through the uncertainties...
If you wish it, son of Vader, the commandos will seize the Imperial ship,
O'Keevum said.
If its people were destroyed quickly, there would be no word from it that would point blame at the Nokri.
I can't let you do that, Luke shook his head. It's too dangerous. There's no way to guarantee they wouldn't get a message off.
O'Keevum drew himself up.
If the Lady Vader is in danger, the Nogri people are willing to take that risk.
Luke looked up at them, an odd sensation rippling through him. Those nightmare Nogri faces hadn't changed, but in the space of a heartbeat, Luke's perception of them had. No longer were they just another abstract set of alien features. Suddenly, they had become the faces of friends.
The last time I had a vision like this, I rushed off without thinking to try and help, he told them quietly. Not only didn't I help them any, but I also nearly cost them their own chance at escape.
He looked down at his artificial right hand, feeling again the ghostly memory of Vader's lightsaber slicing through his wrist.
And lost other things, too.
He looked back up at them.
I won't make that same mistake again. Not with the lives of the Nogri people at stake. I'll wait until the Imperial ship is gone.
Kabarak reached out to gently touch his shoulder.
Do not be concerned for their safety, son of Vader,
he said.
The Lady Vader will not easily be defeated. Not with the Wookiee Chewbacca at her side.
Luke looked up at the stars overhead. No. With Han and Chewie and the whole of palace security beside her, Leia should be able to handle any normal intruders. But there was that final unformed image. The person who'd he'd sensed drawing on the Force. On Jomark, the Jedi Master Sabaoth had made it abundantly clear that he wanted Leia and her children. Could he want them badly enough to personally go to Coruscant for them?
They will prevail,
Kabarak repeated. With an effort, Luke nodded.
I know,
he said, trying to sound like he meant it. There was no sense in all of them worrying. The last of the fires were out. The last of the microfractures sealed. The last of the injured taken to sickbay. And with an odd mixture of resignation and cold-blooded fury, Lando Calrissian gazed out his private command room window and knew that it was over. Cloud City on Bespin, and now Nomad City on Niklon. For the second time, the Empire had taken something he'd worked to create. Had worked and sweated and connived to build, and had turned it into ashes. From his desk console came a beep. Stepping over to it, he leaned down and touched the comm switch.
Calrissian, he said,
wiping his other hand across his forehead.
Sir, this is back at an engine central. The last drive motivator just went.
Lando grimaced. But after all, the damage those TIE fighters had inflicted on his walking mining operation, it didn't exactly come as a surprise.
Any chance of fixing enough of them to get us moving again? He asked.
Not without a frigate's worth of spare parts. Sorry, sir. But there are just too many things broken or fused.
Understood. In that case, you'd better have your people concentrate on keeping life support going.
Yes, sir. Sir, there's a rumor going around that we've lost all long-range communications.
It's only temporary, Lando assured him. We've got people working on it right now, and enough spare parts to build 2 new transmitters.
Yes, sir,
Baggett said, sounding a shade less discouraged.
Well, I guess I'll get over to life support.
Keep me informed, Lando told him.
Switching off the comm, he walked back to the window. 20 days they had. Just 20 days before Niklon's slow rotation took them from the center of the night side across into full sunlight. At which point, it wouldn't much matter whether or not the drive motivators, communication gear, or even life support were working. When the sun began its slow crawl up the horizon over there, everyone still left in Nomad City would be on their way to a very fast and very warm death. 20 days. Lando gazed out the viewport at the night sky, letting his eyes flick across the constellation patterns he'd dreamed up in his occasional idle moments. If they could get the long-range transmitter fixed in the next day or so, they should be able to call Coruscant for help. No matter what the Imperial Attack Force might have done to the shield ships at the Outer System Depot, the New Republic spaceship techs ought to be able to get one of them flying again, at least well enough for one last trip into the inner system. It would be tight, but with any luck at all... Abruptly, his train of thought broke off. There, just shy of directly overhead, the brilliant star of an approaching shield ship had appeared. Reflexively, he took a step toward his desk to sound battle stations. If that was the Imperials again, come to finish the job... He stopped. No. If it was the Imperials, then that was that. He had no more fighters left to send against them, and no defenses remaining on Nomad City itself. There was no point in stirring up the rest of his people for nothing. And then, from the desk, came the screeching static of a comm override signal.
Nomad City, this is General Bell Iblis. Can anyone hear me?
Lando dived for the desk.
This is Lando Calrissian, General, he said, striving for as much nonchalance as he could muster. Is that you out there?
That's us. We were out at Cat Kristak when we picked up your distress signal. I'm sorry we couldn't get here in time.
So am I, Lando said. What's it look like at the shield ship depot?
Afraid it's something of a mess. These shield ships of yours are too big to easily destroy, but the Imperials took a crack at it just the same. At the moment, this one seems to be the only one in any shape to fly.
Well, it's all pretty academic anyway. Nomad City is done for.
No way to get it moving again?
Not in the 20 days we've got before the Dawn Line catches up with us, Lando told him. We might be able to dig it underground deep enough to last out a trip around the dayside, but we'd need heavy equipment that we haven't got.
Maybe we could pull it off Niklon entirely and take it to the outer system for repairs. An assault frigate and a couple of heavy lifters should do the trick, if we can get another shield ship flying.
And could convince Admiral Ackbar to divert an assault frigate from the battle planes, Lando reminded him.
Point. I suppose I should hear the rest of the bad news. What all did the Empire get?
Lando sighed.
Everything. All our stockpiles. Hephridium, Camrys, Dolovite, you name it. If we mined it, they got it.
How much in all?
About 4 months' worth. A little over 3 million at current market prices.
For a moment, Bell Iblis was silent.
I didn't realize this place was that productive. Makes it all the more imperative that we persuade Coruscant to help you get up and running again. How many people do you have down there?
Just under 5,000. Some of them are in pretty bad shape, though.
I've had plenty of experience moving injured people. Don't worry, we'll get them aboard. I'd like you to detail a group to stay behind and get the shield ships operational. We'll transport everyone else to Cat Cristac. Be as good a place as any for you to transmit a formal request for assistance to Coruscant.
I didn't think there were any good places to transmit requests from, Lando growled.
They've got a lot on their minds back there,
Belliblis agreed.
For what it's worth, I'd say you've got a better than average chance that yours won't get lost in the shuffle.
Lando chewed at his lip. So let's skip the shuffle entirely. Take me to Coruscant and let me talk to them in person.
That'll cost you an extra 5 days in travel time. Can you afford it?
Better 5 days spent that way than sitting around Cat Cristac wondering if my transmission has even gotten out of the communications center yet. Figure 5 days to Coruscant, another day or two to talk Leia into reassigning a ship and lifters, and then 10 more to get them here and finish the job.
17 days. Cuts it pretty close.
I don't have any better ideas. What do you say?
Belliblis snorted gently.
Well, I've been planning to head over to Coruscant soon anyway. Might as well be now.
Thank you, General, Lando said.
No problem. Better start getting your people ready. We'll be launching our shuttles as soon as we're in the planetary umbra.
Right. See you soon.
Lando switched off the comm. It was a long shot, all right. He knew that much going in. But realistically, it was the only shot he had. And besides, even if they turned him down flat, a trip to Coruscant right now wouldn't be such a bad idea. He'd get to see Leia and Han, and the brand new twins. Maybe even run into Luke or Wedge. He glanced out the viewport, his lip twisting. And on Coruscant, at least, he wouldn't have to worry about Imperial attacks. Keying the intercom, he began issuing the evacuation orders.
Chapter 8.
Jason had fallen asleep midway through his dinner, but Jaina was still going at it. Lying on her side, Leia shifted position as much as she could on the bed without pulling out of her daughter's reach, and picked up her datapad again. By her own slightly fuzzy count, she'd tried at least 4 times to get through this page.
5th time's the charm,
she commented wryly to Jaina, stroking her daughter's head with her free hand. Jaina, with more immediate things on her mind, didn't respond. For a moment, Leia gazed down at her daughter, a fresh surge of wonder rippling upward through her weariness. Those tiny hands that flailed gently and randomly against her body. The skull cap of short black hairs covering her head. That small face, with its wonderfully earnest expression of infant concentration as she worked at eating. A brand new life. So fragile and yet so remarkably resilient. And she and Han had created it. Had created both of them. Across the room, the door from the living areas of their suite opened.
Hi, sweetheart,
Han called quietly.
Everything all right?
Fine, she murmured back. We're just having another dinner.
They eat like starving Wookiees,
Han said, crossing to the bed and giving the situation a quick scan.
Jason done already?
Just wanted a snack, I guess,
Leia said, craning her neck to look at the sleeping baby lying on the bed behind her. He'll probably want the second course in an hour or so.
I wish they'd get together on scheduling,
Han said, sitting carefully down on the side of the bed and easing the tip of his forefinger into Jason's palm. The tiny hand curled reflexively around his finger, and Leia looked up at her husband in time to see his familiar lopsided grin.
He's gonna be a strong one.
You should feel the grip at this end,
Leia told him, looking back at Jaina.
Is Lando still downstairs?
Yeah, he and Belliblis are still talking to Admiral Drayson,
Han said,
reaching over to rest his free hand on Leia's shoulder. The warmth felt good through her thin dressing gown, almost as good as the warmth of his thoughts against her mind.
Still trying to convince him to divert a couple of ships to Niklon.
How does it look?
Han wiggled his finger gently in Jason's grip, clucking softly at his sleeping son.
Not too good, he admitted. We're not going to get Nomad City off the ground without something the size of an assault frigate. Drayson isn't exactly eager to pull anything that big off the line.
Did you point out how much we need the metals Lando's been mining there?
I mentioned it. He wasn't impressed.
You have to know how to talk to Drayson.
Leia looked down at Jaina. She was still going at it, but her eyes were beginning to drift closed.
Maybe when Jaina is asleep, I can go downstairs and give Lando a hand.
Right,
Han said dryly.
No offense, sweetheart, but falling asleep on the table's not going to impress anyone.
Leia made a face at him.
I'm not that tired, thank you, and I'm certainly getting as much sleep as you are.
Not even close,
Han said, shifting his hand from Leia's shoulder to stroke Jaina's cheek.
I get to doze in the middle of those late-night feedings.
You shouldn't be waking up for them at all, Leia said. Winter or I could get the babies out of their crib just as well as you can.
Nice,
Han said in mock indignation.
You know, you thought I was pretty handy to have around before the kids showed up. Now you don't need me anymore, huh? Just go ahead and toss me aside.
Of course I need you, Leia soothed him. As long as most of the droids are out on defense duty, and there are two babies who have to be changed, you'll always have a place here.
Oh, great, Han growled. I think I'd rather get tossed aside.
It's way too late for that,
Leia assured him, stroking his hand and turning serious again.
I know you want to help, Han, and I really do appreciate it. I just feel guilty.
Well, don't,
Han told her, taking her hand and squeezing it.
We old-time smugglers are used to strange hours, remember?
He glanced over at the door to Winter's room.
Winter gone to bed already?
No, she hasn't come back up yet,
Leia said, stretching her mind toward the room. As near as she could tell, it was indeed empty.
She's got some project of her own going downstairs. I don't know what.
I do,
Han said, his sense turning thoughtful.
She's been down in the library sifting through the old Alliance archives.
Leia craned her neck to study his face.
Trouble?
I don't know, Han said slowly. Winter doesn't talk much about what she's thinking. Not to me, anyway. But she's worried about something.
Beyond the door, Leia caught the flicker of another presence.
She's back, she told Han. I'll see if I can get her to tell me about it.
Good luck,
Han grunted, giving Leia's hand one last squeeze and standing up.
I guess I'll go back downstairs. See if I can help Lando sweet-talk Drayson a little.
The two of you ought to get him into a sabacc game,
Leia suggested.
Play for ships, like you and Lando did with the Falcon. Maybe you can win an assault frigate.
What? Playing against Drayson?
Han said with a snort.
Thanks, hon. But Lando and I wouldn't know what to do with a fleet of our own. I'll see you later.
Okay. I love you, Han.
He gave her another lopsided smile.
I know,
he said, and left. With a sigh, Leia adjusted her shoulder against the pillow and half turned toward Winter's room.
Winter?
She called softly. There was a short pause, then the door swung quietly open.
Yes, Your Highness?
Winter asked, stepping into the room.
I'd like to talk to you for a minute, if it's convenient,
Leia said.
Of course,
Winter said, gliding forward in that wonderfully graceful way of hers that Leia had always envied.
I think Jason's asleep. Shall I put him in the crib? Please,
Leia nodded.
Han tells me you've been doing some research in the old Alliance archives.
Winter's face didn't change, but Leia could sense the subtle change in her sense and body language.
Yes. May I ask why?
Carefully, Winter lifted Jason from the bed and carried him toward the crib.
I think I may have discovered an Imperial agent in the palace, she said. I was trying to confirm that.
Leia felt the hairs on the back of her neck stand up.
Who is it? I'd really rather not make any accusations before I have more information.
Winter said.
I could easily be wrong.
I appreciate your scruples, Leia said. But if you have any idea about this Delta Source information leak, we need to know about it right away.
This isn't connected with Delta Source, Winter said, shaking her head. At least not directly. She hasn't been here long enough for that.
Leia frowned at her, trying to read her sense. There was a great deal of worry there, running squarely into an equally strong desire not to throw around hasty allegations.
Is it Mara Jade? She asked.
Winter hesitated.
Yes, but again, I don't have any proof.
What do you have?
Not very much,
Winter said, tucking the blanket carefully around Jason.
Really only one short conversation with her when I was escorting her up from the medical section. She asked me about what I did during the height of the rebellion, and I told her about my job with supply and procurement. She then identified me as Targeter.
Leia thought back. Winter had had so many code names during that time.
Was that incorrect? No, I had that name for a short time, Winter said. Which is the point, really. I was only known as Targeter for a few weeks on Avaram, before Imperial Intelligence broke the cell there.
I see, Leia said slowly.
And Mara wasn't with the Avarists? I don't know, Winter said, shaking her head. I never met more than a few of that group. That's why I've been searching the records. I thought there might be a complete listing somewhere.
I doubt it, Leia said. Local cells like that almost never kept personnel files. It would be a group death warrant if it fell into Imperial hands.
I know.
Winter looked across the crib at her.
Which rather leaves us at an impasse.
Perhaps, Leia said, gazing past Winter and trying to pull together everything she knew about Mara. It wasn't all that much. As far as she knew, Mara had never claimed any past Alliance affiliation, which would tend to support Winter's suspicions. On the other hand, it had been less than 2 months since she'd enlisted Luke to help her free Card from a detention cell on Grand Admiral Thrawn's own flagship. That didn't make much sense if she was an Imperial agent herself.
I think, she told Winter slowly, that whatever side Mara was once on, she's not there anymore. Any loyalty she has now is probably to Card and his people.
Winter smiled faintly.
Is that Jedi inside, Your Highness? Or just your trained diplomatic opinion?
Some of each, Leia said. I don't think we have anything to fear from her.
I hope you're right.
Winter gestured.
Shall I put Jaina to bed now?
Leia looked down. Jaina's eyes were closed tightly, her tiny mouth making soft sucking motions at the empty air.
Yes, thank you,
she said, giving her daughter's cheek one final caress.
Is that reception for the Sarkin delegation still going on downstairs?
She asked, as she rolled away from Jaina and stretched cramped muscles.
It was when I passed by,
Winter said, picking Jaina up and setting her in the crib next to Jason.
Mon Mothma asked me to suggest you drop in for a few minutes, if you had the chance.
Yes, I'll bet she did, Leia said, getting off the bed and crossing to the wardrobe. One of the little side benefits of having twin infants on her hands was that she finally had an armor-plated excuse for getting out of these superficial government functions that always seemed to take up more time than they were worth. Now, here was Mon Mothma trying to chicane her back into the whole crazy runaround again.
And I'm sorry to have to disappoint her, she added. But I'm afraid I have something more urgent to do right now. Will you watch the twins for me?
Certainly,
Winter said.
May I ask where you'll be?
From the wardrobe, Leia selected something more suitable for public wear than her dressing gown and started to change.
I'm going to see what I can find out about Mara Jade's past,
she said. She could sense Winter's frown all the way across the room.
May I ask how?
Leia smiled tightly.
I'm going to ask her.
He stood before her, his face half hidden by the cowl of his robe, his yellow eyes piercingly bright as they gazed across the infinite distance between them. His lips moved,
but his words were drowned out by the throaty hooting of alarms all around them, filling Mara with an urgency that was rapidly edging into panic. Between her and the Emperor, two figures appeared, the dark